Hello, everyone. It's Michael Jacob with Unleashing Intuition Secrets. I'm joined today by Corey Newsom from Gatlinburg, Tennessee. We met at a couple of events, and he's got some amazing stories. Basically, we're going to deep down a rabbit hole today. We're going to be talking about demonic possession. We're going to be talking about overcoming that and overcoming addiction, and, you know, high speed, you know, things that you can do to overcome that. And Corey is basically well-versed in that right now, and we're going to go into that. But first, let's get a little introduction. Corey, how you doing?
Doing very well, sir. Thank you for having me on today. I'm going to go ahead and start with a quick prayer to let the nerves settle down a little bit. Dear Heavenly Father, just thank you for this opportunity to come together. Please lead me in the direction to overcome the fears that fear of people's opinions of me, fear of failure, and the fear of the unknown. So in your son's precious name we pray, amen.
Amen. So yeah, yes, that's good to start it off like that, because we're kind of going to delve into some dark areas. So putting up a little bubble of protection like you just did is it's very good, and it also helps those people that are gonna be listening as well. So let's go into a little bit of this. So you grew up in Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's correct. I was born in Knoxville, the University of Tennessee, Vols, and grew up actually in the same hometown as Dolly Parton. Went to school in Sevier County. And so right behind in the backyard is a little neighborhood called Frog Alley. And Frog Alley was the neighborhood that Dolly Parton grew up in. And so I would walk after school through the neighborhood of Frog Alley in the park to walk to the Boys and Girls Club. So just to give a reference of where I kind of grew up, that's notoriously known. If you go down there, you'll see a statue of Dolly Parton. And, of course, she has her own theme park down there. So it's widely known. 15 million visitors per year come down there, and they, you know, the Smoky Mountains are a very beautiful area. So that's where I grew up a lot.
I remember when I was a little boy, my school, we did a tour. We went up there and looked at the that area. Very, very beautiful, very, very scenic. Does the Pacific Crest Trail go through there? Are you familiar with that?
That's Pacific, a great
I mean,
story.
The Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. That's what I thought. Someday I'm gonna walk through that area. That looks like a very, very nice area. So hike through.
Yeah.
So let's go into a little bit about, you know, what you talked about as far as like addictions and so forth. How did that happen for you? The lead up to that, and then that situation that you were in. We talked about that before. So
yeah. So. To start, I'm 34 years old, and it started when I was 16. I grew up in a family, in a home that was, alcohol was very prevalent. And so my biological father was not around. Got a funny story about how the Lord led me to him through my journeys. But so at the age of 16 years old, I was pretty good at sports and got, you know, very good at football. And that was kind of where the partying, you know, hanging out with the popular crowd started. Mm-hmm. Of course, the drinking and the marijuana started. And so when I actually really started in the last few years, I've been in recovery for a few years now, but understanding that 50% of my life has been in addiction, you know, 16 years, right? 16 to 32, I'm 34 now, last 2 years in recovery. And so that was pretty eye-opening to realize that 50% of my life on this earth has been, had some type of substance that has been a go-to for me. And, of course, alcohol being heavily influenced on both sides of the family, widely accepted, we didn't talk about it as an issue. It just, my family didn't see it as an issue, and still now, even though they struggle with it, they don't consider themselves to have issues. Where I went, you know, and sought help and counseling and things of that nature, I realized that I was desperate by any means to live a different life. And I just knew that I had better things ahead, and I knew that I was meant for greater. And so with that, I needed to identify, you know, what my challenges were, what my holdups were. And then, of course, through that is where really I experienced the demonic realm. I was raised in church. My grandmother, I would consider her to be the closest form of angelic-like person, human being, you know, raised us in the church. My grandfather was a firefighter of 25 years, so he saved people out of burning buildings, vehicles, car crashes. But he built the church that we went to and volunteered his time for free, but he would not go to church. So I always used to ask my grandma, I don't understand why we go every Sunday, but I'm German, so it's Oma and Opa. Why doesn't Opa go? He built the church. I remember him building it and helping, but he just doesn't go. So I was, as a young child, just couldn't quite wrap my head around that. And then so once I got into, you know, 16, 17 years old, I started experimenting. And then that was whenever I started to go down some dark roads where I've had some issues with entities attacking me. And so it was really up
now going back to your grandmother, cause I'll interrupt a little bit. Cause I know you, if I let you, you just keep talking. That's great. I love that. But, so anyone listening, I'm not being rude. I'm just like, occasionally I'll jump in, give more validity to the conversation. So your grandmother actually said to you one time that there's something bigger in store for you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the first early memory that I have, about 3 or 4 years old, I always told my grandmother, my grandfather, that I wanted to be a professional football player because I wanted the money to help people. And so she always reminded me over the years, you remember the first thing that you told me, you know, at 3 or 4 years old was you just wanted to make a lot of money so you could give it to people and so you could help people. I wanted to go around the world and, you know, help people. And that's just what I said ever since I was, you know, 3 or 4 years old. And that was what my grandmother, you know, continuously reminded me of. She, like I said, my grandfather saved lives on a daily basis for 25 years as a firefighter. And my grandmother introduced me to, we had other children that we sponsored across the world where we would make care packages for them. And so the holidays were spent, you know, doing that and sending quilts and whatnot to kids in other countries. So I was raised that way to be thoughtful of people with less. And but initially, ever since a child, in my brain, I was just always wanting to get to a position to be able to help people. And so the majority of my family's military on both sides. And for some reason, I didn't go down that path. My family is actually very high-ranking military. And so I found my way, I guess, you know, to be a light worker in addiction recovery and helping. So one thing that...
So how far back does your German heritage go? When did your family first immigrate to America?
So my grandmother actually came over on a boat with her parents from Germany. So they went to New Jersey, and then that's when her and my grandfather met. And then ironically enough, they moved to St. Petersburg, where I came down there and met you. That's actually where my...
Yeah. So what year was that?
I'm going to say 1940s.
So they were basically getting out of Germany when the kitten was good, right?
But yeah. Yeah.
Basically coming into power. And
my grandmother, I think she was like 2 years old when she came over on a boat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So she probably doesn't have really any memories of Germany.
Yeah, not to my knowledge. But they did frequent and go over there and visit family. My grandfather was
a
very big historian. He chased down, you know, our family tree for hundreds of years, and so they were constantly traveling and going back over there and visiting family and stuff, and they would always speak in German, so that way we didn't know what they were saying at the dinner table.
Nice. Very good. And you know, that's what I love about America. We're a great big melting pot. So my relatives are like English, and there's some Cherokee in there somewhere, but and a lot of Scandinavian and Scottish. So you know, I'm just a mutt. So you know, it's kind of fun to get, you know, everybody's perspective, you know, what they're about. But regardless, we're all Americans. Doesn't matter if you're what your nationality you came from or whatever it is, we're all Americans. We're all here, especially like you and I, we're here to really serve and help humanity, and not just Americans, but anyone that we can help in the world, really.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that. And I do know that I do have Scottish in me as well. So it's on my grandfather's side, and they come from a very tall family. My grandfather was 6'6", and then his father was over 6'8", and then he says that my great great grandfather, his grandfather, was over 7 foot. So
wow.
It skipped me, right? So but I'm hoping that my son is
you're like me. You're like you're not as tall, but you made up for it in width and muscle.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely have a solid frame. But yeah, like I said, my entire family is military on both sides, and the family name on my grandfather's side is Sawyer. So a lot of prominent Sawyers in the military, and so my
I work with Sawyers in the SEAL team. So yeah, it's a very prominent name. I think a lot of warriors, you know, from those realms. I had a lot of guys that I work with in the SEAL teams that were had German heritage as well. So German, Scottish, you name it, hardcore warrior heritage families. Because my grandfather was World War II Navy guy. So it is you know, kind of a heritage type thing. Now, why do you think that you or why didn't you ever go into the military with your family? You know, super into the military. What happened?
So my uncle allowed me to come live with him on base out in Nevada at Nellis Air Force Base when I was 10 years old. So I got to live on base for a summer with him and experience the life. Honestly, I believe a mixture of my family, my mother and my stepfather, we were constantly getting evictions, and alcohol was a major problem due to that. I moved a lot as a child, and I believe I got in trouble at an early age. So at 16 years, I was out of the home by 15 years old. I grew up in a very abusive, very, very violent home where I was the oldest child. So I was the one that was always trying to protect my mother. And as I got older, I started playing football, you know, and I started hitting the weight room, and then I started taking less and less of the beatings, you know, and I started getting the upper hand on some of them. And it got to a point where the police were being called enough where they basically told my mom, you know, yeah, he's not at fault. Your son's not at fault for the issue, but I was doing some pretty significant damage. I definitely know for a fact that God saved my stepfather on one occasion, because I had it set, you know, in my mind that day was going to be the end of his life, and I was determined. So that was one of the times where the police said he may not be at fault for starting it, but if he does end up consequently taking somebody's life, he would have to face charges for that. So 15 years old, I was out of the home. And sleeping on friends' couches, you know, kind of bouncing around. And unfortunately, my younger brother's siblings, they had already been removed from the home. Their biological father had went ahead and took advantage of the opportunity to take custody of, you know, his two children. And that left me in the home with the younger sister. So, like I said, at an early age, I had to grow up pretty quick, and I got in a lot of trouble. I started hanging out with the wrong people, right? And one of the reasons was because I was playing football at Sevier County, and I was a starter, and they had moved again, got another eviction, moved right over the county line. And so I didn't know, and they didn't know, that you can't transfer schools inside the same district and play on the team the next year, because I played their rivals. So that was pretty much the worst news I had got. My whole world was football. My whole world was sports. And being told that I could not participate and that I would have to sit out a year, I just lost all hope at that point. I already couldn't really go home, you know, because of the rough atmosphere at home. So I pretty much gave up on school at that point. I stopped going to school. You know, the one thing that I was good at was football, and I was able to use the aggression and the violence that I had experienced in the home life, and I could transfer that onto the football field, and that's where I stood out. And I lost that. So when I lost that, I unfortunately just, you know, however it was supposed to work out, the friend that I was living with, their family was heavily into addiction. And of course, his sister was tied up with some gang affiliates and whatnot. So I just was around some of the wrong people at an early age. And so very quickly was in the court systems at 16 years old, you know, sitting in front of judges. And I actually got expelled from the whole entire Jefferson County as a, like, we got in enough trouble where every one of us got sent back to their original, wherever they came from. I got sent back to Sevier County. Some of them got sent back to Nashville. And so we caused quite enough ruckus to get to that point. So I think at that point, my military, I wanted to go to the military. I was talking to recruiters, but they said that, you know, I'd already had a rap sheet. So
yeah, that sucks. That sucks bad. Cause I was kind of like you. I was ready to move on. I eventually got my GED and, you know, left school, and I played football too. But my real dream was to go in the military. So fortunately, I was like, oh, I can go in the military and I don't have to keep doing this stuff. So I was either, you know, be a football star and go into USC, because they were already starting to say, yeah, you're going to go to USC. I was fullback and I was kicking butt. So they were like, but I had that dream of being a Navy SEAL, you know. So I was like, well, this or that. So I went with Navy SEAL, and it worked out pretty good. But fortunately for me, I could have been like you, because I hung out with some pretty bad characters too. But it didn't really get. I never went to jail or anything. Fortunately, yeah. Had some run-ins, but never ended up in jail. So I had a semi-good, you know, home life, semi-good. You know, had a dad that was in and out, kind of like what you're talking about. But you know, it was just enough to get me over that edge. So yeah, that would be super frustrating. So now you're kind of like out there running amok. So tell it. Well, take us forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 16 years old. I'm sitting in juvenile, and they're telling me, like, if you don't straighten up, you're going to, you know, be 18 and you'll just be going next door. And of course I wasn't listening. And so they gave me the option to get my GED. And they said, if you get your GED, we'll take you off of the juvenile system and we'll let you go. You can go do whatever you want to do. And we would recommend leave the state or leave the county at least. So I did that. And then of course, you know, by the time I was 18, I started, PI charge. Alcohol was always an issue since the time I was 16. And that's, like I said, where I've realized that 50% of my, and pretty much my entire adult life, alcohol was an issue. And so that was when I started to identify my demons that I was struggling with. But so by the time I was 18, just working, getting in trouble with the drinking and stuff like that, had a child at 19 years old. And that settled me down pretty good for a little bit. And then I started selling alarm systems for ADT Home Security. Had never done sales before. Started door knocking. And early on success. Within the first week, you know, I made $1,500. Had never made that kind of money before. And within the first 45 days, I was promoted to assistant manager, and then promoted to manager. And then I ended up within 60 days moving to Jacksonville, Florida to help open up a brand new store and develop a sales crew, a sales force.
Wow.
So I was in charge of sales recruiting. I was very good at recruiting talent, new hire training, paperwork, teaching people how to write contracts, get it, you know, door to door, cold calling, closing, getting in, writing up contracts, and had a lot of success early on, and was on track at the time to be, and I've got some pictures where they were giving out free Mercedes-Benz for regional managers. Regional managers were going to make $240 a year, and then you didn't have to knock on doors anymore. You just got to go around the country and or to your region and train sales classes. So when they would come into town, the regional would, you know, give you the keys to the Mercedes and say, here, go take this out for the weekend and see how it feels to you're one step closer, you're right there. And so I was, you know, I bid on that bait very hard. And so for a long time, it was 7 days a week, 7 a.m. I'm on conference calls all the way up until, you know, knocking doors till 10 o'clock at night. So much so to the point where I'm knocking doors at nighttime, having guns pulled on me, because who knocks on doors at nighttime?
Yeah.
Well, when you've got, you know, presidential directors calling down saying, you're the next regional manager, you're going to be the youngest regional manager in the company, they tend to figure out a way to push you past your limits.
You know, I could see how that could be used. It's like, see, so you never know who's going to come knocking. So why not have an ADT system in here?
Yeah. That was part of the close. And then, of course, unfortunately, because of my background, I knew very well about the alarm systems, and I knew how to bypass them and how to make it apparent that it was a necessity for people to have. And so I had a lot of success with it. And
so this is cool, because you can see that, you know, with you, given a good opportunity, you can really take off and run.
Yeah, and that was my early on success. You know, I was making more money than anybody in my family at the point in time, 19, 20, 21 years old, and GED, you know, no college education.
Yeah.
And that was when I started to tap into the entrepreneurial mindset, understanding, you know, folks that went into the sales route. You know, a lot of them didn't necessarily have college educations and stuff like that. And so I saw the path to becoming, you know, a millionaire and being a business owner. And I was highly motivated. Like I said, you know, 16-hour days every single day, 7 days a week, no days off. You know, even a Sunday when I was in Jacksonville, I lived there for almost a year and probably only went to the beach three times, because every Sunday was supposedly a day off, but I was in the office doing correcting contracts, figuring out what the new hire pool looked like, who was going to be in there Monday morning for training. And so, but you know, I was chasing that. I wanted that $250,000 a year salary, and I wanted it before I was 24. So I went all over the country. You know, they would tell us, go open up a new store and hit these numbers. This is what the last regional manager did, and this is what you've got to prove. Then it was, go to this store that has been open for a long time and they're not producing the way that they were. So you need to go in and revamp it and pull the numbers back up. And if you can do that, then you'll prove yourself. So I over the course of a few years realized that they were just dangling that carrot in front of me, because I was a producer. And you know, and it helped. You know, I had company apartments, a fleet of vans, company car, phones paid for, you know, allowance. I mean, from the outside looking in, it looked like, you know, I had the dream life. I didn't pay for an apartment. They paid for it, you know, all this fleet of vans, you know, and could have like buddies come and live with us and stuff like that. So we'd be all, you know, sometimes, you know, 5 or 6 people deep in an apartment is all my buddies, you know, and I'm trying to get everybody on the same level. But we're, you know, every single day, 7 a.m., I'm on the call with presidential directors, and sometimes the owner of the company would get on and we're going back and forth, you know, talking trash about, you know, who's going to be the number one store in the region. And it was fun for a long time, you know, especially when I'm going into the bank and I'm cashing checks and the bank manager's like, how are you doing this? Like, what do you do for a living? And so when I have the bank manager asking me how I'm getting these checks, I'm like, hey, well, if you'd like to, you can come to a training class. And so, right. So I've had this success with sales and probably one of the hardest forms of sales door to door. And that has been the polar opposite of my life wave journey. I can't understand it for the life of me. And this life wave journey has become the challenge of my lifetime because I refuse to quit. And I believe in the product. I know I go to the meetings, you know, by any means necessary. And I see the people that are involved. I hear the miracles. I witness it. I wore the patches myself. It truly has been something that has helped me in my recovery because they do help with cravings. You know, it has.
So let's go to that. Let's go to where LifeWave first came in your life. And this is very synchronistic as far as, like, you know, how you and I kind of like things have come together for us. So talk about, you know, how you got connected with LifeWave.
Yeah, so I was back as a manager of a resort, and it's a water park down in Sevier County, big, huge water park, pretty cool place. And I had worked my way back up to manager, and we're skipping a large chapter where I had had some run-ins with some dark demonic entities that had caused me to like lose my mind, and I went on a homeless journey and all that stuff. But this point,
let's just slip into that just a little bit, because this is how you met your father. You've never met him before, but you met your father on this kind of like alternate journey. So tell us about the woman and the
baby
and stuff like that. This is crazy.
So my father wasn't a part of my life. I vaguely remember maybe about 2 or 3 years old, he was there for just little snippets, and they were not good memories. They were bad memories. So fast forward, skip 30 years, I ended up raising a child. I'm with this woman for 8 going on 9 years. We had a very chaotic lifestyle. We met right after my ADT venture, where I was successful with sales. I decided to stop being on the road. I was just constantly on the road. So I came back home, and then I just quit sales altogether. And so it just so happened that I started running into old buddies, started picking up old behaviors, and started partaking in activities that I shouldn't have been. And then so me and her meet at the same time. And our lifestyles commingled. She came from a wealthy family that was essentially mafia affiliated. And so that lifestyle that they were used to kind of matched the lifestyle of what my friends were, what they were doing. And right now, most of them are sitting in federal penitentiary. So God protected me from all that. But we fast forward like 7 years, we end up having a baby together. He was born on life support. He had all of his organs on the outside of his body. He was born with a hole in his heart. It's called an omphalocele, and it ranges from small, medium, large to giant. And what happens is where the umbilical cord is supposed to connect the skin all the way around, an organ will start to protrude out. And so small is maybe a little bit of the intestine. Medium is maybe all of the intestine is protruding. Small, medium, large, giant, all the way up to is several organs are identified outside of the body. So when he was born, I'm sitting there behind the curtain. I can see her. And the first thing I see, everybody in the room looking at me. I was like, okay, this is weird. This doesn't feel normal. And the first thing the doctor says is call the ER and call Children's Hospital. And everybody's staring at me. I was like, that's not normal. And next thing I know, they just take me and they're like, we need you to come with us. So they rushed me out into the hall and they didn't tell me anything for a couple hours. Come to find out, what he had was a giant infalocele, where 1 in 10,000 children will have this birth defect throughout the world. And his stomach, liver, large intestine, and spleen were all in a sack, like a clear water balloon. And you could see them all perfectly.
Damn.
And so he also had a hole in his heart, and he also had underdeveloped lungs because of all of this. And so I ended up raising this child. We spent the first 7 months of his life in Children's Hospital. I've been medically trained, vet trained, all the training that comes with dealing with a child that's on life support. And, you know, he was there for the first 7 months. Ironically enough, he came home on my birthday. And so then, you know, I raised him with her. I ended up saving his life twice. He coded on us and went blue, and all that training I had to kick in because his mother freaked out. The nurse, they're not really trained for these types of situations. And fast forward, you know.
Now, you thought that he was your child because they did a test, right? Now, why? You had doubts, obviously, because you had the blood test, right, to see if it's a genetic test.
Yeah, so I had doubts just primarily because of our lifestyle. It was as toxic as a relationship as one could ever be described. And, you know, the lifestyle that we were living was insane. Lot of money, lot of addiction on both ends, and just, you know, like I said, anyways. But yeah, so when they did the blood work, they wanted to see from a genetic standpoint, was this something that was in my family? But they told us, you know, sometimes we find out that the father's not the father. So they fast forward 2.5 years, we're doing great. Baby's doing great. We have a beautiful home, you know, cars, I'm going to work, coming home to the family. And it was that point where I guess like the enemy, the devil, came in and just ripped our family apart. And she started using again, and I just like,
but what was she on?
So alcohol was always an issue, and I guess there was this one specific girl that I do. She knows I can't stand her because I know that she has a demonic entity attached to her. And she came around after like 2 or so years after I ran her off. And I wake up one morning about 4 o'clock in the morning because I can hear her voice in my sleep. And I was like, this is not happening. She's like, I know who it is. I know that voice anywhere. So I go out into the living room and she's sitting on my couch at 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's when I realized, I was like, oh shit, like this is a horrible sign. And, you know, so it didn't take but a week after that, and she was back to using hardcore. And I could tell in the behavior changes. So my son, he had a nurse, right, round the clock.
What was she using, heroin, or what was she on?
I would imagine, well, it was either that or methamphetamine. So,
okay, all right.
And then also, you know,
you don't have to tell me. I mean, if you don't feel comfortable saying it, it's fine.
It's a tough story, but yeah, whatever. It's my life, and this is what happened. This is why I lost my mind, because I had a beautiful life, had a beautiful family, you know, to come home to every day. At this point in time, I was recruited by the gentleman who owns the flight school at McGee Tyson Airport. He owns the flight school that teaches everybody to get their pilot's license. So I'm detailing all of his airplanes. He's putting me through airplane mechanic school. I'm literally out on the airfield crying to God, like, thank you, God, for giving me this opportunity. I'm finally going to make something of myself. And then 2 weeks later, I'm checking into the homeless shelter. And so what happened is I realized her behaviors. I knew what was going on. I told the nurse, my son's nurse, because he had been with us for like a year. And I said, look, I know you love my son. I know you love our family. You need to be aware of what's going on, what you're walking into professionally every day. When you leave, this is what's going on. And so he didn't believe me. And I wrote him a 30-page letter explaining everything, and I still got it. I never gave it to him because he didn't believe me. He went and told her what I told him. So the next thing I know, she's telling me, he's not your biological child. You need to move out of the house. And I was like, and after about the fifth or sixth time, I was like, okay, she's not making this up. There's no reason that she keeps going on and on. So basically,
when I hear that, there's two reasons for her to do that. One is protect you because you don't realize you're in a situation which is not really your responsibility. And the other is because you can't be responsible and you have to leave because you're not the biological father. Which one was that? Or was it a combination?
Well, given the fact that there was, you know, she was under the influence of alcohol and drugs, I can't honestly answer that. All I know is that she finally just kept saying it and kept saying it. And so I was like, you know what? You've got to be telling the truth. So I went to Children's Hospital. I got the attorney, Alex Brinson, to open up an investigation on my behalf. And within a few hours, he had the answer. And he said, from a father to a father, I want you to know the answer. And so he got it, and he put me on the phone with the lady that said, no, actually 2 years ago, I had this conversation with her that the genetics test came back and he was not yours. So she knew the entire time.
Wow.
Then I prayed to God. I just remember leaving one night, and I went and cried in the parking lot for hours. And I was just like, God, what do I do? Because I didn't want to leave my son behind knowing that she had relapsed. The nurse didn't believe me. We had already overcame a situation with DCS and all this and got the case closed and went through an insane, like I've got letters of recommendation from nurses and every single organization that was tied into the case of how great of parents we were, how great of a, you know, especially with a medically fragile child, the strides that he had made, it was just amazing to see the growth. And so we'd overcome this huge Goliath of a situation, and then for it all to just be taken away by the devil.
Rumble.
I just was like, I don't know what to do, God. And God told me to leave. And God said, you can't do anything else. You've done all you can do. You got to let it go. He's not your child. It's about to get bad. It's about to get real bad.
Wow. And so tell us a little bit, because you're speaking about demonic and angelic, and angelics comes in eventually, conversations with God and so forth. At what point did all that come to coalesce for you, that you realize there's demonic forces, angelic, and the connection with God?
So I definitely have had visions and seen things the majority of my entire life. And ever since a young child, I've always had this sleep paralysis, and I can see and feel something pressing down on my chest, like the weight of the world, you know, and I could never identify what that was. It's just like when you're screaming out for help and you can't move, you can't do anything right. And I finally started to understand sleep paralysis. But really, it was through the experimentation of drugs. For whatever reason, I said to myself, I'm going to try everything because I want to tell my children what not to do. So I have firsthand experience, right? And I learned that the hard way. And I opened up
the demonics. What they will do if they see someone that in the future is going to be a great benefit to humanity, they'll wake into their Christ itself and spiritual side and so forth. They will come in and they'll try to influence you, like obviously they were doing for a long time. And even the sleep paralysis is a lot of times it's them like pressing on you, because some people had said they've awakened and seen a demon on them trying to suffocate them.
Yeah, I've definitely had that happen. And realistically, like I've had people throughout my life just come to me and say, God has something big for you. You're going to do something big. And so I've gotten that a lot. And I'm like floating through life, Like, I'd like to get my sign sometime soon.
All
And
right.
then it wasn't really, and then it wasn't really until, well, the experimentation with heavy drugs that I opened up some portals where I was visited and attacked, and I even had one attach itself to me where I felt the additional weight. I was walking up the stairs, I saw the second shadow behind my shadow. The animals in our house, the animals that are used to seeing me on a daily basis, started hissing at me. We had little kittens and cats. And I
Wow.
come walking up the stairs, and they're just like, they're all just hissing to, like, they're freaked out. And even so much so, like, we were living in this cabin in the woods, and this specific night, we had my roommate had tamed these raccoons to the point where they would come and eat food out of your hand. So when you open up
Wow.
the back door, they're all sitting out there. They're used to human interaction.
Yeah.
And when I went out on the back porch, even the raccoons were like freaking out and hissing, and I just started crying to God.
Wow.
I was, well, I know I've done something bad.
Wow, that's good. Yeah.
I've pushed too many buttons. I was that person in the spaceship that wants to push all the buttons and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I did that.
And that's really cool, because I think for me, nature has been a cleansing, factor for a long time. So if you feel yourself getting, if I feel myself getting like you, maybe, on the wrong side of things, I'll go into nature and nature will cleanse me. So it sounds like nature did that for you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely scared myself straight. And so I had one attach itself to me, and it visited me, and it sat on the other side of the glass door on the back porch. And it was this big, huge, gnarly looking beast thing. And I was sitting there like, okay, that's real. And it wouldn't open the door, but it sat on the roof of the house the entire night, scratching and scratching. And I just felt like death. Like I was like, I'm not going to make it out of this. And the next day I go to the car, and it had ripped the CD player out of the car, out of the dash, and it had claw marks all through the car. And
Damn.
like these little claw marks were all in the headrest, and it was dug into like where the airbag comes out of the car and the dash, like, that te whatever that texture is, you could tell that
Wow.
the claw marks had dug through it, right? And so I'm
That's
like,
some good confirmation there. So, wow, that's
freaking out. He was like, did you do this to the car? And I'm like, why would I mess up our car? Like, this is, and then it kicked in like, oh shit, like that's what was here. That's what the animals were freaking out about. And I saw it too. So I scared myself straight. And then I got to this point where I was like, okay, if this is real and I cannot deny it, then there's the other side of it. If I know that I've experienced the demonic realm, I've been attached. Something attached itself to me. Something clearly was physically after me, all the way up to the point where I had it walked up the stairs and spit like this nasty loogie looking thing in my boxers and set it on my bed. And I'm like, it was disgusting. And but it, I saw. So at this point, I'm like, okay, this is all real. This is happening. That
Yeah.
means that God is real. There's angels. There's another side of it.
Yeah.
It's not possible for this to be real and there not be an equal, force. So that was
That
when I was
that's
like,
really
okay.
cool, because that was my wake up call as well, where I was like playing, I was acting like a badass. I was going against I was on the etheric realm, traveling and going after baddies, terrorists. And they had demons attached to them, and those demons came back, followed me back, and then came at me. And that's when Archangel Michael came into my life. And like, it's like, oh, you went a little too far there. You need to do this with love now. And here, I'm gonna send you back in. Do it with love, and you'll be safe. So.
Like I said, I had several life and death experiences where I've, had guns put to my head, and God sent me a vehicle at that moment for me to be able to escape. Been in, brawls with the cartel where it was 11 on three. There's no way I should have made it out of there. I come to and I'm down to my underwear. They had essentially beat the crap out of me and I made it out of that situation. There's other life and death situations. I'm like, there's no way I should have made it out of this situation. Like God is trying to keep me around and keep me alive for something. And then so it was fast.
Those are a lot of times those are teaching opportunities for you as well.
Yeah, so
So
fast
it, it,
forward
yeah, go ahead.
2 years ago, yeah, I had recaptured and so anyways, I end up realizing my child's not my child. I check into the homeless shelter. I was working for the multimillionaire who I was the flight school out there at McGee Tyson Airport, and then I just completely disappeared to MIA, went and checked in the homeless shelter. Now I'm running the streets, just drinking my life away and actually trying to get myself killed. Like I'm running down there because there's demonic entities down there. I know what's going on. People come up missing.
So
People
where is
are
that spot where you're talking about, that under that
so
bridge, whatever?
it's pretty famous. It's everybody knows is under the bridge in Knoxville. They call it the Gates to Hell, and you got to be of some type of badass to be able to go down there. And so my biological father lived there for years and years and years. And so when I became homeless, I bump into him in the streets one day, and I'd seen Facebook profile pictures. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, that kind of looks like my dad. I've not seen him in 30 years. So I end up like walking up to him. I'm like, hey man, is your name Richie? And he was like, who the F are you? And what do you want? Real street mentality. Like, and so I was like, hey, I was like, I'm your son. And I had to show him my ID for him to actually believe me. So we quickly get to the point where I'm like, look, I don't judge you. You realize that I'm out here. I've made some mistakes in my life to get myself to this point. Like, we're going to start from scratch. We're on the streets. We're not friends. We're not family. We're just looking out for each other. Number one, make sure we don't get robbed and we stay alive. If you can show me that you can watch my back, I'll watch your back. And so I was like, and then we'll maybe be friends. And so, of course, I'm still heavily into addiction and drinking. And down there, you're watching people overdose on the daily. People get, unfortunately, people get mutilated down there. Some very, very bad things happen down there. So I pulled myself out of the situation. I ended up going and living in the woods because I wanted to be away from everybody. So I went and found a tent and went and lived in the woods. I got pictures of all this stuff. I documented everything. God, for some reason, made me document all this stuff, even though I didn't want to.
Yeah, we'll have to do another show because we couldn't figure out how to get your how to share the screen for you, but we'll figure it out and
Yeah, so the whole
we'll bring you
time
back and do another show.
Yeah, I took videos of it, right? And so the whole time I'm like, I don't want to do these videos, but something in my brain is telling me you got to do this because you're going to make it to the other side of this and nobody's going to believe this. So I was like, I did. I documented underneath the bridge, with dangerous people, living in the woods. And fast forward, I get a friend to help me. I was living in the woods and I go ahead and I take the opportunity to move into their couch. And I went and go get my old job back at the resort. I started doing good again, work myself up to management. And then that's whenever my sponsor, Natalie, introduced me to LifeWave. And she saw that I was working out, eating healthy, had a lot of good things going for me, just received a promotion for a manager. And so I just went through all this stuff and I was keeping it, I didn't want anybody to know about it. And so she introduced me to the patches. And so I was like, yeah, cool. I'll look into it. If it's going to help me out in the gym, let's do it. And next thing I know, I start using the patches, and it was like 3 weeks later, I go and get baptized, right? And I waited my whole life for whatever reason. But I'd already experienced a demonic realm and some very gnarly situations where I knew I should have died. And I'm like, okay. It's definitely time to. I'm not living that life no more. I want to live the other life. And so I went and got baptized, and it didn't really make sense till somebody brought it up that possibly wearing the patches, ignited something inside of
Yeah,
me that
that's what a
caused
lot of
everything.
people have been saying, that it actually start it ignites something. So that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, real quick,
God's gift to humanity
yeah.
through the founder, yeah, I think. So it's really cool.
Yeah. So then, I end up coming into the company, and 3 weeks, like the first month, 30 days in, my sponsor's like, "Hey, I'm going to buy your ticket to the global convention if you can schedule time. And at first I was like, if I can make it, sure. So then for whatever reason, I ended up quitting my job. I went through this ridiculous point where I was still drinking. And because when I got baptized, it did not help very much. It just made things a little bit, it turned the volume up, right? And I was thinking my life was going to get smoother, but I started getting attacked more. And I was like, okay. But so I go to Orlando to the global convention, only been a part of the company for a month, had really no clue about any of it. I just had my early on success with ADT. I'm like, I'm going to kill this. I got it. I should be, you know, SPD within a year, whatever, director within 30 days. And so I go to Orlando and I get the ride down there and I run out of money. So I tell my sponsor that I have a place to stay down there. So I ended up lying to her because I knew something inside of me was like, you have to make that trip. You have to. You like it, your life depends on it. And so I end up riding with my sponsor to Orlando. I tell her that I have a place to stay down there. Mind you, I've already been homeless. I've already lived in the woods. I'm like, I don't care. I'll sleep outside. I'm going to this event. So I end up
sleeping. But she didn't know that. You just did it.
Yeah, she didn't know that. So I documented this and I recorded it.
Wow.
And I've got the video of my yoga mat out there that I use as padding and my huge beach towel that I use as a blanket. And my suitcase is in the bushes. And I recorded it the next morning I woke up and I let, you know, God kept telling me, you need to keep recording this stuff. Nobody's going to believe this. And so I recorded it and I let it be known that I came with literally no money. I got the ride to get there, had no place to stay, but, and I even like God gave me, I walked into a Goodwill like a week prior looking for a black shirt to go underneath my work shirt. And this shirt's laying there, my size. It says failure is not an option. And it's brand new. And I was like, thank you, God. Appreciate that. $5. I'll take it. And so that's the shirt that I wear to convention. And that's the shirt that I have in the picture. And that's the shirt that I have in the video. So I get there to Orlando and I record this video in the bushes away from the resort where I find a good enough spot where nobody's going to find me.
Yeah.
And I've got this shirt on that says failure is not an option. And I'm just sitting here like, this is really happening right now. Like I stayed outside, whatever. But I'm
now, you really know, that's really cool that you're able to do that though, really, because, you know, a lot of homeless people, they know how to disappear. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of them can walk the street and people don't even see them.
Sure.
It's like they just go in invisibly. I did the same thing as a SEAL and still kind of do now, but that is a nice technique, and that is learned over time. They're very interesting. So you can move and exist in all these different realms of consciousness and reality and so forth. I've literally
recorded pictures of being under the bridge with, you know, very dangerous demonic entities, murderers, you know, people overdosing and dying from drugs. And the same day, go and change clothes and go to rooftop parties and be sitting and speaking with millionaires and like high influential people in the same day. And I even was living out of a storage unit. And when I was homeless, because I was like, I got to do this a little better, be a little more crafty and presentable. So I go rent a storage unit. And I've got documents of this too. So I make a makeshift apartment out of the storage unit. And I come in. This lady, they were unloading this furniture to their unit, and I walk in with my homeless stuff, my sleeping bag, all this stuff, and I went upstairs because I knew I was going out to dinner, and I changed into my GQ swag. And this lady was downstairs, and she goes, wait a second, didn't you just come in, like, with all this homeless gear on? You come out with your loafers on and your polo. She was like, what just happened? Like, and I was like, I'm going through a situation right now, like...
we have such a parallel life, because when I worked for the CIA, it was like that, you know. I'm on a move and I'm like, you know, I got my body armor on and all my stuff and ready to fight, and then we come in, I change into a suit, and I got to go with another case officer and he's going to a party where the president of the country is, and I'm hanging out talking to everybody like I'm one of them. It's insane.
Yeah, so I realized my ability to do this, and then that's whenever I realized that I have an ability, and I still go down to the homeless shelter, and because when I got into recovery finally, and I made a commitment to God, right? I guess you call it, the word that I'm thinking of, a commitment to God to say, God, I need you to start answering my prayers for real, and I will stay sober this time. I'm making a commitment. I will stay sober because it's the only thing I can think at this point that I was like, I need that proof. Like, I got to do something so crazy that I'll stay sober. So I made that commitment to God. And next thing I know, I just started getting prayers answered all the way up to the point where I manifested 2 weeks ago. I didn't even know you, and I manifested coming and meet you. And so that's just another prayer answered. And so it's like, I don't even think about it anymore because I did ask God. I said, start answering my prayers and I'll do my part. And
then you saw me in some kind of like speaking or something like that.
Yeah. I started watching your YouTube channel, or I'm sorry, your podcast. And then that's when I started realizing that your intuitive word training, the intuitive side of things, understanding past lives. And that was where I was like, okay, finally I got somebody I can talk to that understands a little bit about what I understand, because I feel like I've got this knowledge that was already downloaded to me that I'm just now tapping into. But the ability to move between worlds where, like I said, I still go down and volunteer at the homeless shelter because I can't ever forget where I came from.
Yeah.
And so I'll go down there.
That's really good. So at what point from, you know, you went to that convention and you made the commitment. And how far back was that commitment, and how long have you been completely sober?
So I'm working on 7 months right now. So when I went to the convention, I just got involved with the company. That was a little over a year and a half ago. It was August of 2022. And I still apparently at that point in time hadn't got it right. I wasn't done with the drinking. And so over the course of the last year and a half, I continued to go to treatment facilities. I am literally, I've got the pictures and stuff where I'm in treatment trying to build my Lifeway business. I'm like, okay, I got 30 to 90 days to sit down and focus on this. So I'm trying to learn how to build my Lifeway business from treatment. And so I have, you know, special people that were placed in my life to really keep me accountable and motivate me to never give up on this Lifeway journey. So I just 7 months ago made that commitment to where I was like, for some reason, I'm sticking with this Lifeway thing. I was like, I'm not making the money for it to make any sense, but I just believe so much in the technology. I believe in the people. And I was like, I want to be with those people. And then somehow I keep coming to these events and I get invited to these, you know, elite groups of people that people back home here, they don't even believe me. And so it's just like, it's almost like I come back to this world and I'm like trying to explain another world that I get to go to. Like I just got to go to, you know, 2 weeks ago with you guys down there in Naples and then also into Orlando, and people back here, they just can't wrap their head around it. And I'm like, well, I stay away from me then. Just don't mess with my energy, because when I go hang out with these people, they believe in me. And I got this wild, wicked story of how I videotaped underneath the bridge being homeless, and I was going to use these patches to get me out of here. And this was my ticket out of here. Mm. And so for some reason, I decided to video record it. And then now I've been instructed to document it and do a full-fledged documentary. And then, of course, now I need the attention put towards putting my money where my mouth is, right? You know, it's, you know, I'm sober, I'm healthy, I'm back in the gym, I've got people that I take to the gym. So I know the patches are working in that regard, right? My bank account might not match everything else.
Well, there is, you are actually helping a lot of people. Like you told your grandmother long ago, you would give your money to people that needed it, and you're doing that with patches. Now tell us about how you've been helping, people with addiction problems and passionate people, yeah, how that's helping them heal. Yeah. Tell us, that's crazy. And eventually we got to get you back on so you can, like, you know, share some of this video stuff. I know you're going to do a documentary, so you're probably going to have a lot of this stuff in there, but maybe we can do a little bit.
Yeah, so that was really where my journey began, because I was so desperate to get help and stay sober that the patches just kind of stayed in tandem right there along the process. And with Dr. Tom Acklin, he's a MD neurologist, and he has a wide understanding of the brain and the effects of chemicals and, you know, through addiction and stuff like that. So he just never gave up on me. He was like, stay on these patches, it will work. And then I find the similarities with recovery in the patches. Don't quit before the miracle, right? In recovery, it's one day at a time. Just focus on today. It's the same thing. Just wear this patch for today, and don't quit before the miracle happens. And so I'm noticing these similarities, and then so I started getting, because I've over the last 6 months worked myself up to the point where I'm in charge of the men in the program. You know, I've basically taken over as the maintenance and stuff. And so I've got people, like I said, I take to the gym, I teach them healthier habits, a little bit about nutrition and stuff like that. And so as an incentive, I was like, hey, if you come to the gym with me, I'll give you a free patch, right? So it was like an incentive to get people to the gym. And so it kind of started catching on. And I was like, and then I started teaching people about LifeWave and stuff like that. And then I started getting results where people were like, hey, you know, it's helping out with my anxiety, my depression. It's helping out with my cravings for nicotine. And then it goes deeper to a level where people are actually, and you guys know, that have been involved, you know, weaning people off of medications, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's where I kind of was like, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this because this is the vision that God gave me. And I've also caught some flack for it. So me and my business partner are no longer seeing eye to eye. She's very pro slap a pill on everything and keep everybody on medications, because she wants to develop another program that we get to bill the insurance companies for keeping people on medications.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm trying to teach people holistic, healthier options.
Yeah.
And so now,
yeah, some of those medications that get people off of other addictive, harmful substances are as addictive and sometimes just as harmful, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. And, yeah, you know, it's whenever I had people call me back and say, hey, thank you so much for introducing this to me. You know, I actually have hope that I can possibly come off of this. And that's where I was like, okay, that's what it's all for. Like, just because I don't have the promotion or the title yet, I was like, I know I'm making a difference in people's lives, and that's why I haven't quit. And that's why I'm not going to quit, because I know the vision that God gave me. I'm using my own testimony as proof that it has helped me in my recovery. It has helped get me back to a healthier lifestyle, surrounding myself with the right individuals. And, you know, I want to be able to show that to other people. And like you and your wife explained, living out the experience that you want other people, or living out the reality that you want other people to experience. Did I say that right?
Yeah. You're basically being the example. So you're a perfect example, because you basically got off of, there's no substance abuse in your life now, and you've used the patches to basically turn your life around. Yeah. And it's going to another level again. So that's going to be the thing that's going to help you build your business, because all of us have that have built big businesses have had something spectacular that's happened to us and we can share. And then we have a lot of people that, you know, are in our businesses that have spectacular, you know, things that happen to them too. And just keeps growing from that. And that's what's happened with me and other people that have big businesses. So that is where your potential comes in. And this could be, and it, you know, it's up to you whether you use this as your thing. I think you should. Like, this is absolutely amazing. Yeah. I think the people who are going to watch this are going to want to connect with you. So how can people connect with you if they want to?
Yeah, so I've been instructed and guided towards building my own brand. I came up with a concept of Big News Healing, which is my story. My nickname growing up in football was my last name's News, so it was Big News, from working out and stuff like that. So then I just come up with this Big News Healing. That's my nickname, and then my healing process, right? And then so Big News Healing, because healing is big news. And so
Cool.
that's something that I feel like God gave me. So I wrote it down. And now I've been instructed to create my own brand. And so I need additional help with teaching of how to really take advantage of the social media platforms. I've got bignewshealing@gmail.com. I've got a Facebook.
Not good.
I need to really wrap this all together and start utilizing the social media platforms to broadcast this story, because I want to take it to a whole nother level, as far as potentially being able to compete. Like, I just found out today that we've got a marathon with a 26-mile marathon that's coming up in town, and so I want to compete in that. So I want to start competing at higher levels. I want to start taking it to from where I was a year and a half ago, completely just distraught, homeless, fighting my demons with addiction, to going to the highest levels, right? And pushing my body, using the patches, because I want to stay natural. And I want to really lead by example and start showing people that, we are powerful beyond measure, and that when we allow our own light to shine, our presence automatically liberates others to do the same. And so that quote, I can't remember who quoted it, but I heard it when I was 18 years old, powerful beyond measure, and I just burst out into tears. I started crying because I knew that that was my life. I knew I was living in a world. I needed to get to another world. And so I've always known that I was powerful beyond measure. And I always knew that there was another world awaiting me. And I'm finally starting to see that happen. And
Cool.
I'm not letting anything or anyone get in my way. All I have to do is stay sober. And God's just blessing me, blessing me, blessing me. So, yeah.
That's good. So bignewshealing.com.
Bignewshealing@gmail.com. So anybody that wants to help,
Oh, at
need to
gmail.com. Okay.
Gmail. I need to create an
Yeah,
actual.
we'll definitely put that in the description box so people can connect with you that way. Now, also, if they want to connect with you at LifeWave, if there's people listening to this, maybe they have people in their lives that have addiction issues that might want to, start their own program with you so you can actually help them. That would be, tremendous because you're trying to grow a business and you're trying to help other people. And then eventually some of those people will probably grow a business too. That's how these things work. So
Yeah.
we'll get your link, your LifeWave link, in there as well. So definitely send me both of those after the show, and I'll put those in the description box, and then post this video. I mean, you got a great story. We'll continue on this. Maybe next week we'll come in and we'll get some of those. We'll figure out how to work the Zoom link for sharing. And then we'll get some of those pictures. Those pictures absolutely stunning, stunning that you have. And it's probably gonna turn some people like, oh my God. I mean, I'd heard about some of these issues. What's that one thing where this new drug that's happening where it's like eating the flesh of
Yeah,
people?
it's called xylazine, and what it is, it's a mixture of fentanyl cut with horse tranquilizer, and it has another street name called Trank Dope. And it's essentially, I believe it was sent by China, and it's the zombie apocalypse. And so when you're seeing in these major cities all over the world, these individuals that are slumped over, and it's like they're still standing, but their heads between their knees and their hands, that is a It was originally, you know, heroin cut with fentanyl was the ones that was killing everybody, but they've come out with this new xylazine where once the user starts putting that chemical into their body, they cannot go back to the old heroin and fentanyl. It won't, and even the Narcan won't work on them. So when the police or the EMTs are showing up to Narcan them, it doesn't matter how many times they Narcan them, it doesn't do anything.
Oh,
and
shit.
No, it rots the body. It rots the body from the inside out.
Oh.
And so you'll see people with major sores.
Yeah.
And the
right now, just so people can see, grab your phone if you have it handy and go to that one picture of the one guy that you're helping with the patches.
Yes.
Hold it up to the video.
Yeah, I'm actually on my phone. I wasn't able to get.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. We'll do it next time. So yeah, it's a little easier, but everybody's like, well, I got to see it. Yeah, it's like his whole arm is like this antwig.
Yeah, from his elbow to his wrist on both arms are rotted all the way to the bone, essentially. And that's what that drug does. It eats the body from the inside out. And
now you're putting I think the X39 on him.
Yeah.
And he started to heal up.
Yeah, I've got pictures that I've been documenting this process. And
because his mom contacted you and
his mom knew that I worked in recovery, and he works on the, I'm a professional mover also, so he works on the crew that I work for. But because of his addiction, he's not been able to work. And so his mother called me and she was like, I know you work in the field. Can you please help my son? He just overdosed. The hospitals won't take him. The jail won't take him because the wounds are so severe. And I was like, okay, listen. I was like, they're most likely he's got a demonic entity attached to him. They're like, yeah, we're pretty positive that that's what's going on. I said, generally, when people are putting those types of chemicals and drugs into their body, that's the case. I said, but this is the path that God has chose me to work in. And so I'll take the challenge on and I'll work with them. And so I said, I've got this idea. Just hear me out. Right. And so I was like, let's try this out and see what happens. And so I went ahead and put one on him. And the next day he came back and his family had said that he was a little more alert that next day. Then we started the documentary of the pictures of over the course of 3 days, several days, and on into it. Some changes, positive changes, healing, obviously. But we're still dealing with a demonic entity that has to be extracted. So this is getting to be where I've got to call in, you know, some help on this one, because this would be my first attempt of an exorcism. Right. And like, I'm not necessarily sure that I'm spiritually fed enough to be able to handle that. Although I'm very aware of it and I'm used to it, right? Being in that world and being in the street element. And really it's in all levels. Like you'll find more demonic entities in the church sometimes and in the higher ranking politicians and the CEOs of companies, just as much as you will, in the streets and in addiction recovery. But, whatever, I've been able to move amongst them. And then I've also seen, you know, a lot of angelic like things happened, and my life is tripping me out.
Well, you're doing some amazing things and having some great results. Like I said, I think it's going to be really good for humanity going forward to bring this in. Now, we'll continue this conversation next week. We'll get the you know, the video, that some of the video you have and some of the pictures and so forth. Now, another reason why I want to go deeper into this and more forward into this is because, like we talk about kind of offline, the two of us, the treatment centers and so forth, they're not there to heal people.
No. And like I said, for whatever reason, you know, that I'm doing so well in my life, and I've been helping people in my community, and they're responding to me. Thank you so much for introducing this to me. Me and my business partner are now a complete odds. Like,
right.
For whatever reason, she's developing a program, and I guess it's just the schooling that she went to. Right? It's
She's in that system. That basically does not work.
And well,
so
and
we
the business,
have to create something new and break away from that, and that's what I think you're.
She put me on. She put me on her nonprofit as the president of her company, right? And I've been helping her build a marketing team for fundraising for our cause. And so her program that she's wanted to develop is one where they bill people for the prescriptions and the medications, and we keep them in house, and we bill the insurance companies. There's millions and millions of dollars involved with this, right? And it sounds great. But I made a promise to God a long time ago to stop idolizing money. I'm not allowed to idolize money, because nothing's going to happen that I would like. My vision isn't going to happen if all I'm focused on is how many millions of dollars I can make. And so,
and that's good, because you will get shut down, and you've seen that. I've seen it as well. So if you're not doing it for the greater good, and you want to get in a position where you don't have to struggle to survive, because then you can't contribute as much. So we need to get you at least to that point, and then you can start to expand. And I think that's I don't doubt that's coming for you, but it's still going to be a challenge for you. As you see, you're going to constantly be attacked in different ways. You trusted and so forth. That's the way of this beast right now.
Yeah, and I was listening to your podcast with the young lady about co-creating your reality.
Yeah. Heather Mays, yeah.
And understanding that relationships are going to fall off and energies are going to start to fall off. And although it was good for the season, that doesn't mean that, even though what's happening to me right now in my business relationship with my business partners completely went to shit, that person is not ready for my energy and where it's going. And I understand that now, because we're going in two separate paths. She's going on a path that wants to heavily medicate and keep them on it for years to come and build the insurance companies. Yeah. I want to see people truly healthy. I want to see them, you know, eating correctly, the food that God provided for us, learning how to, you know, have that lifestyle. And I'm in the process of creating a program, that implements all these things, and it's a project that it's, like I said, it's a vision that God gave me, and I have to stay on track with that vision. And I'm literally walking away from a deal right now that's, you know, we were getting $6 million in real estate to turn into more program houses, and I'm just like, you know what, we're not going the same direction. And maybe, there's no maybe, what I'm doing is what God asked me to do, and it's bigger than just right here in this little city.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have some pretty amazing people in the chat, and they're chatting right now. It says, they're saying, amazing guy with very nice, calm energy, and he was chosen by God to help others, in my opinion. So, you know, people could see it, like we're talking about. You know, there's people that think that you have that capability to help others. But it can be somewhat of a burden, but you have to get it to the point where it's easy for you, and you have that calmness, and you've had those challenges, and you know how to overcome stuff, and you know how to build businesses. If you just get the right opportunity, which I believe very strongly you have now, you can really take off with it and help a lot of people, and that's the key. You know, you're like, I don't know why I'm not building this business and making a lot of money. It's not. So again, it's not about that. It's about helping people. And when you start to help people, that's when you're going to really take off. Your wealth is in direct proportion to how many people you help. So, yeah, you're right on the cusp of that. And I think it's very exciting for you and for other people that are going to benefit from, you know, what you're doing. So, unfortunately, this is where I have to call it, because I have another show coming up pretty soon. So Corey Newsome, and that's spelled Newsome, or is it S-O-M?
No relation to Gavin Newsome in California.
Oh, okay. Newsome. No E.
Yeah.
No, noose him.
Yeah.
Very good. I'm glad to hear that. So it was kind of written in my thing that it was with an E. So I was like, I had to make sure. All right. So, Corey, again, thank you so much. It was great talking with you, and I look forward to talking with you in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on. And it went better than expected. And the more that I progress, the more naturally this will flow.
Yeah, that was good prayer in the beginning, so I think it helped out.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for listening to Unleashing Intuition Secrets, the podcast. Until next time, stay in the love vibration as you continue your journey to become the master of your reality.